You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. We love the earth. It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Thursday, January 18th, 2018, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the program. We got a full slate for you today. My guest is Dr. Jehan Marcu from Americans for Safe Access. He's going to be joining us after the bottom of the hour in the patient-focused update. Actually, around 23 after the hour, after our 20 after break. For our patient-focused update, where we take a look at the latest news regarding federal and state medical marijuana patients. So you want to stay tuned for that. We went into great detail about a number of issues, including the Veterans Administration, the looming government shutdown, medical marijuana versus the opioid crisis, and more. So stay tuned. That's coming up here in just a few minutes. Also on the program today, in What in the News, we are going to take a look at the rabid pot-hating Sessions, not Jeff Sessions, but Representative Pete Sessions from Amarillo, Texas. He was recently in a committee hearing where he went off at length about the gateway theory and the merchants of addiction. And he meant marijuana companies, not pharmaceutical and alcohol companies. It's amazing. You'll hear some of the clips in our cannabis headline news, and I got to riff a little bit more about that when we get into What in the News. Also in What in the News, Representative Barbara Lee is introducing the House's version of the Marijuana Justice Act, the companion bill to Senator Cory Booker's Senate version. This is the one that would apply, apply the Rohrabacher Amendment to all state legal marijuana, whether it's medical or recreational, basically say federal hands off the state legal marijuana states. So we'll cover that also. And then at the end of the program, we'll have time for a radical rant where the folks at Project Samuel are so excited about this poll they just commissioned from Mason-Dixon. We'll tell you about the poll numbers also in the news. So much so that they are spinning like a fidget spinner to try to make some good out of these numbers that once again show that very few people support the federal prohibition on marijuana. Plus, I got some response from one of the Project Sam members who might be a guest on this show in the near future, so stay tuned for that. But now, let's get to the news.
This is your cannabis headline news, brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your cannabis headline news for Thursday, January 18th, 2018. I'm Russ Belville. Veterans Administration Secretary David Shulkin admitted that the department can legally perform research on medical marijuana. In testimony to the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs, Shulkin was asked by Senator Tester from Montana about his earlier comments that the VA could not legally perform such research.
VA can do research on marijuana, but I said that we're restricted because it's a class one substance, so we have to go through multiple agencies, and it is very challenging to work our way through that process.
Having failed to take up the challenge of negotiating the DEA's research bureaucracy to help the nation's veterans struggling with PTSD, a process successfully followed by a civilian doctor named Sue Sisley, Shulkin punted the issue back to the legislative branch.
If Congress made it easier to go through the process, it would probably happen faster.
The House Rules Committee debated but did not vote on a far-reaching amendment to protect state marijuana laws from federal interference. The measure, sponsored by Congressman Jared Polis, a Democrat of Colorado, would have prevented the Department of Justice from spending money to prosecute people who are in compliance with state marijuana policies. During the debate, Congressman Pete Sessions, a Republican from Texas, revived the debunked gateway drug theory.
Young people, many of them that get into heroin, methamphetamines, and a lot of other things, begin not only with marijuana, but by addiction.
Sessions then pivoted to tie marijuana legalization to opioid overdoses.
We have an opioid addiction problem, And what do? We go and politically push this garbage, illegal drugs, garbage.
Sessions wrapped it all up by calling out marijuana businesses.
Marijuana is an addictive product, and the merchants of addiction make it that way. They make it for addiction. They make it to where our people, our young people, become addicted to marijuana and keep going.
Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, has been forced to drop his push for criminal sentencing reform by Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Last week, Kushner held a roundtable discussion with the president, several Republican governors, and conservative activists. According to three sources with knowledge of the meeting, Kushner had been keen on limiting mandatory minimum sentencing for drug crimes, a position supported by Republicans on the Senate Judiciary Committee. But Sessions opposes any repeal of mandatory minimums, so Kushner dropped that subject from the agenda of the meeting. The White House did not respond to a request for clarification about Kushner's nor the White House's official position on sentencing reform.
A stronger and fairer New Jersey embraces criminal justice reform comprehensively. And that includes a process to legalize marijuana.
Democratic Governor Phil Murphy of New Jersey is now facing a political roadblock to fulfilling his promise to legalize marijuana. His fellow Democrats. Six New Jersey state senators tell New Jersey Advance Media they plan to vote no on any bill legalizing pot for recreational use by adults. Another two of these Democratic senators are rejecting legalization, but would support decriminalization. However, the Democratic senator sponsoring the legalization bill says he's got commitments from at least two Republicans to vote for legalization, with another leaning toward supporting it. Two other Republicans would reject legalization but support decriminalization. 21 of 40 senators are needed to defeat the bill, and this current whip count shows 21 to defeat it, 13 Republicans and 8 Democrats who are ready to vote no. A poll commissioned by prohibitionist group Project Sam finds that only 16% of voters support current federal marijuana laws. The Mason-Dixon poll found that 29% would support prohibition only if medical marijuana were legal federally, and another 5% supported medical marijuana combined with federal decriminalization of marijuana possession. A plurality of 49% of those surveyed supported legalization of commercial production, sale, and use of marijuana. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for Thursday, January 18th, 2018. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Now that California has legalized recreational marijuana, you need to get the latest expertise on the rules and regulations governing this multi-billion dollar market. The International Cannabis Business Conference is the longest running event of its kind in California. Join us at the Hyatt Regency San Francisco for the fourth annual ICBC and the first conference in California after legalization. You'll be treated to focused presentations from California's top industry experts, featuring the head of California's Cannabis Commission, Lori Ajax. At the VIP reception, you'll have the chance to meet marijuana legend and new cannabis entrepreneur, Tommy Chong. After the conference, you'll be treated to a VIP after party featuring DJ Muggs from Cypress Hill. It's the International Cannabis Business Conference in San Francisco, February 1st and 2nd at the Hyatt Regency. Visit internationalcbc.com for details. Make sure you log on to internationalcbc.com for your tickets to California's first marijuana business conference under legalization.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal Potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House. Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
People can say no to drug use.
It's really, really easy.
Adding more gasoline to the fire.
Lackadaisical.
Really tough, really big, really great.
To infect and rot our nation's bones.
dangerous and gateway drugs.
We don't need to be legalizing marijuana.
To build and grow a stronger, healthier, and drug-free society.
Today we have a couple stories in What in the News. First, let's take a look at what's happening on the good side of the ledger, and that is in the House of Representatives. Representative Barbara Lee and Ro Khanna, I think that's how you pronounce the name, introduced the Marijuana Justice Act. And this is a companion bill to Senator Cory Booker's Marijuana Justice Act. And basically, this is a bill to allow states that have legalized marijuana for adults to continue doing so without federal interference. Basically, carving out an exception to the Controlled Substances Act's enforcement in those states. And of course, this is a bill that is long overdue and way short of what we really want, full federal decriminalization, but it's a step in the right direction. So it's great to have Representative Lee introducing this bill. And as you listen to this congressperson talk about the subject of marijuana legalization and the drug war in general, just pay close attention to how she frames this and how she describes the compelling need to pass this bill as soon as possible, if not sooner. This is Representative Barbara Lee.
We're here to announce, of course, the introduction of the Marijuana Justice Act. And believe it or not, here on the first day, we have 12 co-sponsors in the House, which is really remarkable. Really remarkable. It's a roadmap not only on how we're going to end this war on drugs, but also begin to address mass incarceration and the disinvestment that has taken place in communities of color. But it goes much further also than just legalization. This bill is really an essential step in correcting the injustices of the failed war on drugs, as Queen said, namely the racial disparities in marijuana arrests and incarceration. The bill provides a path for people with certain federal marijuana charges to expunge their records. It would also help those currently serving time for marijuana convictions to petition for resentencing. It also forces states with records of racial bias in sentencing, and there are many, and arrests to clean up their act, finally, by cutting funds for law enforcement and prison construction for the worst offenders. And finally, it would provide for a new reinvestment fund directed toward communities that have been devastated by the failed war on drugs. Restorative justice is extremely important in this effort. We all know that it's not just enough to expunge records and end over-incarceration. These victims of these failed policies deserve support during the reentry process, including job training, legal assistance, and more. This issue has never been more urgent than it is today. Attorney General Jeff Sessions' decision to rescind the Cole Amendment could have devastating consequences, not only in my home state of California, but states throughout the country. And we know who is most likely to suffer from a revival, and that's what his actions would precipitate, and that's a revival of the war on drugs in terms of marginalized communities and people of color. So I believe that the Trump administration has made a major miscalculation. People understand that marijuana criminalization has failed. That's why more than 60% of Americans support legalization. We're committed to this goal, but we also need to get it right. And people of color, the victims of the policy, need to be at the forefront of this effort. With the Marijuana Justice Act, we have an opportunity to forge a new path, one that's inclusive and one that is just. So I want to thank you again. This is a new day. Not only are we fighting back, but we're moving forward. Thank you.
Marijuana Justice Act in the House, Representative Barbara Lee. And I appreciate her comments, and she's spot on when it comes to describing how the failed war on drugs, and there ought to be like a smoking game for that, right? Every time she says failed war on drugs, take a toke. But there's a devastating consequence to this failed war on drugs, and that is the issues of mass incarceration and the devastation of black and brown communities. And there's intersectionality in this. There's a lot that's involved, but you can't look at what's going on in this country with respect to racism and incarceration and disproportionate enforcement of these laws without looking at the drug war itself. But I do have to quibble with the congresswoman on one particular point. And that's when she said, I think the Trump administration has made a serious miscalculation. in ramping up this war on drugs. No. No, this calculation is exactly what the Trump administration wants. Clamping down on black and brown people? Hell, Jeff Sessions just had to change his underwear. If he's listening, I mean, that's exactly what they want to do. People, don't ever get confused by some of the talking points that you'll hear about this failed war on drugs. The war on drugs has failed, because if you look at it the right way, the war on drugs has succeeded beyond its originators' wildest ambitions. Okay, so it succeeded in incarcerating people. It succeeded in infiltrating black power groups. It succeeded in crushing leftist political movements. It succeeded in creating massive stock price, income from these private prison stocks. It has succeeded in every way it was intended to succeed. But still, thank you for introducing the Marijuana Justice Act. And I also want to take some time to go to the other side of the aisle, both ideologically, politically, and also just in almost every single way. This man is the opposite of Representative Barbara Lee. It's Representative Pete Sessions, not Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, but Pete Sessions out of Amarillo, Texas. You may remember his name because my representative, Earl Blumenauer, the congressman from Oregon, is part of a movement to put up billboards in Pete Sessions' district, asking him why he's blocking our veterans from getting medical cannabis for PTSD. So Pete Sessions was in this hearing where Representative Jared Polis, one of our Legion fighters here from Colorado, he was introducing an amendment to have a pro-marijuana amendment, and Sessions couldn't help himself but to go off about how terrible marijuana is. Of course, first he had to invoke the gateway drug theory.
Young people, many of them that get into heroin, methamphetamines, and a lot of other things, begin not only with marijuana but by addiction.
Now, that's the typical gateway theory, which is people look at, oh my God, every time we look at someone who's on heroin, who died from heroin or coke or methamphetamine, and we look through their past, the first illegal drug they took was marijuana. And so they make the logical error of saying, well, therefore, if we can stop the marijuana, we can stop people from dying of heroin. Because obviously, if you start with marijuana and you move on to heroin, then let's nip the problem in the bud, pardon the pun. Let's go after the marijuana. Of course, the problem with this logic is they're looking at things the wrong way. They're looking at it backwards. They're looking at the binoculars through the wrong end. Yeah, almost everyone who's ever done heroin started with marijuana. But almost everyone that uses marijuana doesn't go on to heroin. There's nothing pharmacologically, sociologically, there's nothing about marijuana itself, the chemical constituents, the CBD, the THC, the CBN, the CBGBs, all the CBs. There's nothing about those molecules that rewires your brain to say, now I need heroin. Nothing. It's been proven. It's been debunked since 1999. Every study that's looked at it says there's no causal relationship between the use of marijuana and the use of other drugs. But this guy can't help himself. None of them can help themselves because they just see it's a moral argument. Illegal drugs doesn't mean illegal drugs, means evil drugs. Just means evil. And if you're taking marijuana, that's evil, and it's going to lead to more evil. This has to do with evil, not the actual effects of the drugs. But I do have to give Sessions some credit because he does recognize what his problem is.
I admit my problem is I've never smoked a marijuana cigarette, never had one in my hand. And I admit that's a problem.
Yes, that's a problem because you don't know what the you're talking about. Lots of us, some 111 million of us here in America, have tried a marijuana cigarette. And we can tell you it didn't make us want to go try any more heroin or anything like that. One last clip from Representative Pete Sessions out of Texas here.
The governor of California said, who's going to want to work? We're all high.
That is so ironic coming from a congressman, a Republican congressman, on the eve of the government potentially shutting down because the Republicans in control of the White House, the House of Representatives, and the Senate can't pass a budget resolution. We're high. We're getting our work done, Congressman.
that was really horrible.
Oh, you're always complaining.
All right, folks, the sound means it's 20 after the hour. That means it's 4:20 in Denver, Colorado. And in celebration of the first state to legalize the adult use of marijuana, I think it's important that we all take a break and have ourselves a little safety meeting. I'll see you on the other side of the break. And don't forget the anti-drug public service announcement coming up and Dr. Jehan Marku from Americans for Safe Access. If you work in the cannabis industry, consume marijuana, or just support freedom, you need to know about breaking policy news that affects you. Marijuana Moment is the daily newsletter that helps you stay on top of all the latest and most important state, federal, and international cannabis developments. Brought to you by longtime legalization activist Tom Angel, Marijuana Moment puts a concise yet comprehensive overview of cannabis news in your inbox early every weekday morning. Wake up to Marijuana Moment and rest assured you'll be ready for the cannabis news that's driving the day. Subscribe now at marijuanamoment.net.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the gay agenda, only with better music. The Marijuana Agenda is a listener-supported independent podcast brought to you by Radical Russ Media, LLC. Subscribe to our VIP feed at MJAgenda.com for access to our ad-free podcast segment archive. Make a one-time donation to support the Marijuana Agenda at paypal.me/radicalruss. Now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
Hi, Patsy here again. Did you know that kids take drugs right out of your medicine cabinet? Which is why I've taken all the labels off our prescriptions.
Honey, are these your prescription hormone pills or mine?
You have the orange one. I'm sorry.
Don't be a Patsy. Learn a better way from the partnership and our community partners.
This has been an actual anti-drug public service announcement. To combat this and other drug war hysteria, listen to the Marijuana Agenda every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific at live.mjagenda.com or download the free podcast at mjagenda.com. The Marijuana Agenda free podcast is available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, SoundCloud, and on our Facebook page at MJ Agenda. Free video archives are available at the Radical Russ channel on YouTube. Help keep this media free by making a donation at paypal.me/radicalruss. You're not high. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
We need to say, as Nancy Reagan said, just say no. Don't do it. There's no excuse for this.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Welcome to ACE's patient-focused update. Since California became the first state to restore cannabis as medicine in 1996, almost every U.S. state now recognizes some form of cannabis as medicine. But since 1971, the federal government has steadfastly denied the medical benefits of herbal cannabis. Americans for Safe Access is the nation's leading organization fighting for the rights of all patients who use cannabis as medicine. Join us now for another edition of ACE's patient-focused update.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of ACE's Patient-Focused Update, the podcast for Americans for Safe Access, the nation's leading organization fighting for the rights of all patients who use cannabis medicinally. You can find out more at safeaccessnow.org. And joining us on the program today, we have Dr. Jehan Marku, who's the Chief Science Officer for ACE. Jehan, welcome back.
Hello. Thank you.
I think the most pressing thing for us to talk about, and by the time our listeners hear this, it may have already been resolved or not, but it's the looming threat on Capitol Hill of a government shutdown as Republicans in the House and the Senate can't seem to come up with a way to continually fund the government. And I'm curious, since we have so much intersection with federal policy when we talk about medical marijuana and the DOJ and their ability to go after patients, especially since we've had the rescinding of some of these memos, and we'll talk about that a little later. But can you give us an idea politically what we're looking at here as far as this government shutdown and how it might affect patients?
Yeah, so just a little bit of background. People saw this coming. It's something that Jeff Sessions was very clear about making happen as part of his agenda. So, at the end of 2017, federal protections for medical cannabis and providers started to hang in the balance. Previously, Congress has had three times passed the stopgap funding measure that included the CJS medical marijuana amendment, extending the restrictions on the Department of Justice and therefore the DEA, until January 19th. Now, this is something that's been tried for about a decade before it started getting passed. And so what we're looking at tomorrow is probably a delay because of the government shutdown. And so the fate of medical cannabis protections will be decided by negotiations between the House and Senate on basically the fiscal year 18 appropriations bill. And Sessions has urged Congress not to extend this protective amendment to the Commerce, Justice, and Science, the CJS budget amendment. Earlier this year, the amendment was blocked from being considered by the House committee. And again, remember, this was first introduced in 2001, and it didn't get approved until the first time it was approved was 2014. So I think what some of us are worried about is that it is kind of hanging in the balance. If there is a vote on it tomorrow, we don't know if we'll have the support to get it passed by our elected officials, or it might be delayed until February 16th.
And that would be in the case if they're doing that continuing resolution that might be one of their stopgap solutions?
Yeah, and we don't really, no one has a really good crystal ball to predict what will happen. But I think people should really start being prepared for the event that raids will increase. And I think it's a bit of a misunderstanding to kind of yawn at the potential of a raid from the current administration, because they've still been happening. They've been happening at the state level. We've seen, in Indiana, CBD product suppliers were raided. We've seen, they haven't been happening with support of the DOJ, but they've still been quietly happening here or there in states. And we're really nervous that this will cause an upswell in the ability for the DOJ to go after cannabis operators they don't like. And so we've been really pushing dispensary staff and other people who work at cannabis operations to be trained on what to do in the event of a raid, and not just for your safety and protection, but for your patients and their caregivers who are in your dispensary. In the event that there is a federal law enforcement interaction, is your staff ready? Would they know what to say? And I think that is a really important and hard question to ask. What would your staff say if they were, separated and questioned by the DEA and asked, like, who owns this? How much cannabis is here? Would they know what to say? Would they know what the magic words are when dealing with law enforcement? And if you're wondering what those magic words are, I choose to remain silent and I want to see a lawyer. And I would say that you should teach that to everyone you know, everyone you work with, your family members, your neighbors, because you want to be prepared. You don't want to be caught in a chaotic situation and not ready for it. If you want to learn more about what it was like to live in in the pre-Cole Memo era, we have posted a webinar recently free on our YouTube channel for ASA that goes into more detail about the history of this and also talks with providers who were raided and showing pictures from the raids and discussing how and why these were conducted.
Let's talk a little bit more about the federal policy, because I recently saw news concerning the Veterans Administration and Secretary David Shulkin being caught in somewhat of a misstatement and with regard to VA policy with medical cannabis. Could you give us a little insight on that?
So to put it in context, on December 8th, the Department of Veteran Affairs updated their policy, encouraging the Veterans Health Administration healthcare providers to discuss cannabis use with veterans. Now, the VA physicians are still barred from completing the state paperwork required for veterans to register, but the new directive states veterans must not be denied services solely because they are participating in state-approved marijuana programs. And I think this is an important step, and I think it's worth mentioning that due to the Conant decision in federal court, physicians are allowed to discuss pros and cons of patients regardless of their status in a cannabis program, registered or not. So the VA directive 2017-1315 replaces the 2011 directive that technically expired in 2016 but remained the department policy. So this new directive encourages the Veteran Health Administration providers to discuss cannabis with any veteran seeking information about it, including potentially how to treat medical or psychiatric conditions. So, you know, the pros and cons of using it for different conditions, and may relate, you know, it to other medications or aspects of overall care. So I think this is basically updating their policy to be more in line with the rights that doctors already have who aren't part of the VA.
And also recently, there was a plea from the veteran service organizations, many veterans and activists, to ask why the VA doctors, why the VA research facilities aren't studying medical cannabis use for our veterans. And the secretary of the VA said they weren't allowed to. Turns out they are allowed to. It's just hard. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, I think that, you know, to be a little brusque, I'd say, you know, it's a little bit of put up or shut up. You know, it is hard to do research. Life is hard, too. But, you know, just saying I don't want to fill out the paperwork, they won't let me do research, is really, I mean, there's lots of people doing cannabis research. John Hopkins is doing inhaled cannabis, THC and CBD studies right now. You know, we are seeing kids given CBD all across the country and in university and controlled settings. So, you know, research is happening. It is difficult. It is hard. You got to, you know, cross every T, dot every I, and go through a very antiquated system of application, review, and processing. And I think that, you know, that's a lot of people aren't driven enough to do it. So I think that we need to update the way we talk about research, saying, yeah, there are barriers to research. It's a lot of paperwork. It takes a long time, but it is possible. And we are seeing more and more clinical trials starting in the U.S. and abroad with U.S. collaborators.
Well, that's good news. Now let's take a look at another arm of the federal government, the Drug Enforcement Administration, which apparently has been forced to correct some misinformation that had been promulgated. Can you give us more detail?
This is my favorite story of 2017, I think. ASA filed a legal request with the Department of Justice demanding that the DEA immediately remove from their website and materials more than 25 false statements on the DEA's website and educational materials about cannabis, which constituted a violation of the Information Quality Act, otherwise known as the Data Quality Act, which requires that administrative agencies, therefore government agencies, may not provide false information to the public. And they have to respond to requests for correction of information within 60 days. So what we did at ASA is we basically, after the DEA put out their denial of rescheduling petition, we went through that entire petition, including the published study that they just sort of stapled onto the back of it. I don't know if you ever saw it, but it's like a very short report by the DEA, and then they just staple, like, you know, let's paperclip a previously published research article to our report. So we took that information, and what they said in the public space when they denied cannabis, this is actually cannabis fulfills many of the factors required for rescheduling. You know, it's medical efficacy. It's known the products can be standardized. We've seen this with Sativex and Bedrocan and other cannabis products that have been used in studies. And we took what they said in public about the denial of rescheduling, and then compare that with what they say on their website, the information they give to government officials, information they give to teachers, and it turns out that they were vastly different. When they were denying the rescheduling petition, they said that there were no long-term consequences of cannabis use on cognitive function, citing one or two studies. Very surprising coming from the DEA. However, on their website, you could find materials for the public that said that a single use of marijuana would cause irreversible damage to the brain. And so we said, well, this is what they said in this official report. This is what they say in their educational materials. This is what they say in their materials that they share with the government. We even went so far as to compare the quality of the references they use. And it turns out that for a lot of their educational documents, and for example, the dangers and consequences of marijuana use, or dangers and consequences of drug use, they had this series of booklets. Those were largely research that was published, 30 years ago, never reproduced. A lot of it was their own press releases. And so basically they removed the dangers and consequences of cannabis, or dangers and consequences of marijuana, from their website. It got removed under pressure from the Information Quality Act because it actually contained 23 factual inaccuracies in violations of the IQA. And so basically they yielded to pressure and removed misinformation on cannabis from their website.
That's fantastic. I love that we get the law working on our side at the federal level. It's a great story from 2017. Now, I also want to take a look at what's happening here in 2018. I just got finished watching some testimony in the House of Representatives, a meeting in the House of Representatives that was focused on cannabis. And next thing you know, one of these anti-cannabis Republicans is bringing up the opioid crisis. And, oh, no, marijuana is the gateway to opioids and addiction. And, of course, we know that's not true. I'd like to know more about what Americans for Safe Access is doing on this issue to educate and let the general public know that marijuana is the gateway out of the opioid crisis.
Thank you, Russ. So ASA launched a comprehensive campaign on cannabis, as a tool in the opioid crisis. And I think we believe at ASA that, and I sincerely believe that this is a blueprint for state policy. And David Mangone and Beth Collins, Marissa Valerie, Jeffrey Marshall, and Debbie Churgay at the ASA office have really been working feverishly on this campaign, because what it points out to us is that, one, the adult use market, the rec market, does not provide access to everyone, and neither does the medical cannabis market. There's still a large portion of people who aren't allowed to access it because they're on prescription medications, such as for opiates. They could lose those prescription medications. They could lose access to their health care by testing positive for a Schedule I substance. There are people where chronic pain is not recognized as a treatment condition. Places like New Jersey, which are surrounded by states that allow chronic pain for the longest time, did not recognize chronic pain, still pretty much does not. But, Delaware, Pennsylvania does. So we have this patchwork of states where people with chronic pain conditions could access cannabis, but there still were some issues. But we have a guidebook, a free guidebook called Medical Cannabis as a Tool to Combat Pain in the Opioid Crisis, a Blueprint for State Policy. This covers legislative and regulatory solutions, model legislation, emergency proclamations, and flow charts, and tons of data to help lawmakers identify these barriers to access. And already, elements of ASA's model legislation are being implemented in D.C., in the District of Columbia, in an effort to reduce opioid overdose deaths. And I think that in tandem with the release of this report, we held several rallies on November 1st, in D.C. with the U.S. Pain Foundation. We held a rally with Congressman Earl Blumenauer. And this was all to encourage policymakers to consider medical cannabis as an option. A lot of advocates delivered letters to the leadership of the Senate and House committees on appropriation, you know, also urging them to include the CJS amendment in the appropriations package. Again, this was also, we have to remember that the President's Commission on Drug Abuse and Combating Opioid Crisis, they had this commission come out, which pretty much ignored any scientific data. And so they omitted basically all available clinical research data on the safety and effectiveness of cannabis for treating chronic pain. I just want to say that they omitted, as in they did not include available clinical research data on the safety and effectiveness of cannabis in their official report. So ASA filed two requests under the Freedom of Information Act to make the commission disclose how they drafted the final report, because it looks like that it was drafted with a very narrow scope and really no experts. People have experience doing any research on cannabis, whether for abuse or for therapeutic purposes. So it was really questionable where they got their information from and what information they used for their effort to combat the opioid epidemic.
Mm. Well, thanks for taking that on and giving the public more than enough information to make the right decision with regard to cannabis and opioids. It just it's remarkable to me that we still have to do this, but we still have to do this. Let's take a look now at another popularly known molecule, CBD, cannabidiol. You've got some information about the World Health Organization taking a look at this?
Yeah, so the WHO initial reports, their sort of report before they make an official report, or the report to help them write the official report, says CBD needs no restrictions. And so we have to remember, although it's scientifically unfair and politically untenable, I think, CBD is a Schedule I substance in the United States and internationally scheduled by the Narcotics Council at the UN. So this was a big move on the international stage, where the World Health Expert Committee on Drug Dependence announced that it is determined that CBD does not require international scheduling, the classification system that restricts access to drugs, to use a euphemism. The initial findings lay the foundation for a full review of CBD and other cannabis-related substances. So maybe we might see other cannabinoid compounds of some 60 to 100 or so that have been identified up for consideration as well. So there's going to be a May meeting in 2018, which will include a special session on cannabis to cover the cannabis plant, resin, extracts, tinctures, THC and CBD and related compounds. So findings about the drug safety and efficacy by the WHO have influence on federal agencies such as the FDA, Health and Human Services, because drug scheduling in the U.S. is tied to international treaties. So the WHO asked, in advance of the WHO meeting, the FDA asked for input on CBD and 16 other substances. ASA submitted its formal comments on CBD and urged the FDA to use its traditional rulemaking process to remove CBD from the drug schedules, because there already is a process in place that the FDA could use in its traditional rulemaking process to start the rescheduling process.
All right, Jehan. Well, we've talked about the international level with the World Health Organization, the federal level with the DEA and the DOJ. Let's get down to the state level here in the United States. What can you tell us about what's happening with medical cannabis across the nation?
Well, ASA has released a report on the medical cannabis programs in the U.S., where we grade each program and assign them letter grades based on points for different things. So some of the big news, though, is West Virginia joins medical cannabis states with Senate Bill 386, known as the West Virginia Medical Cannabis Act, and it goes into effect July 18th. Basically, physicians who register with the program will be able to recommend cannabis to patients with serious medical conditions ranging from seizures to muscle spasms. Home cultivation will not be allowed. Smoking is banned, but vaporization and other methods are permitted. Indiana and Wisconsin have enacted limited CBD laws for seizures. So in Wisconsin, that's Governor Walker signed Senate Bill 10, allowing CBD extracts to be used in the treatment of seizures. It was unanimously passed in the assembly, 98-0. So it covers possession and use of CBD, but production or sale of it will remain illegal. So this is one of those manna from heaven bills where you're just supposed to kind of wait for the CBD to fall out of the sky.
Yeah, the immaculate conception, I suppose, right. Somehow.
Indiana as well passed another unanimous bill in the state, and it was a 3-1 margin in the Senate. And so basically, again, it's a very similar program. They can register the state to use CBD oil, though there's no provision for production or distribution. So we also saw Virginia expanding the program, Hawaii dispensaries opening, and Guam has started licensing business and mandating patient-focused certification for these businesses.
All right, let's wrap things up here with a look at what's happening with your patient-focused certification. I know that's something that you guys are promoting, and tell us what's the latest.
Well, recently we've helped certify 20 businesses and trained hundreds of industry professionals in California, Delaware, Florida, Maryland, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and in District of Columbia. And so we've been putting a lot of content up for the public, including special guest lectures by Ethan Russo, one of the world's leading experts on clinical trials in cannabis. John McKay, who shared his 30 years of experience with laboratory analysis with us. So we have some free content that we're starting to put on the YouTube page. But we are holding another training, which will focus on dispensary and cultivation staff at the end of the month. And this is going to focus on the usual stuff you need to run a successful cannabis operation, but also on an intense workshop on federal law enforcement interactions, police interactions. And I think the crowd's going to have a lot of fun because we are dusting off ACE's old raid training to bring that back in a more functional manner. So, you know, typically these trainings are PowerPoint presentations, but back when I worked at a dispensary, you know, we would dress up as police with wooden guns and really train the staff on how to deal with these situations. And so this was a regular occurrence, is to get ready for these things. And so we are, you know, in anticipation of sessions getting its way, we have been adapting our training to this changing landscape.
Yeah, it's a shame we have to go back to raid training. We were hoping those days were over, but everything old is new again, apparently.
Yeah, and I think that even if you're in a state where you feel like it's a low risk, education and training are always good. You know, you don't want to get fined or you don't want to have issues in the workplace. You know, you want to make sure your staff know what they can and can't say with patients, how to deal with people. But the basics of customer service are always good to work on too, in addition to raid trainings.
Yeah, good point. Well, Dr. Jehan Marku, Chief Science Officer for Americans for Safe Access, thanks again for joining us on the patient focused update, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Sounds good.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. MJAgenda.com.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is brought to you by Cannabis Kamikaze, a professional licensed producer from Canada producing 3 pounds per light. Follow Cannabis Kamikaze on Twitter at Cannabis Kamikaze. That's at Cannabis, K-A-M-I-K-A-Z. Cannabis Kamikaze.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Today in the United States, 1 in 5 Americans live where adult access to cannabis is legal. Another 2 in 5 Americans live in medical marijuana states. But the government still claims there's no accepted medical use for cannabis in the United States, even after 20 years of medical marijuana in California. Huh. And they say we're the ones who can't think straight.
Health Cannabinoid, your ACMPR experts. Consultation services for medical cannabis. Visit healthcannabinoid.com or call 1-800-906-1383. That's www.healthcannabinoid.com or call 1-800-906-1383. Health Cannabinoid.
Total war against public enemy public number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill.
That was the point.
I think we'd be a mistake to leave the state.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Don't smoke marijuana. I'm a big sports fan, and I don't know if you watch sports or not, but there's a point in certain games that gets to be called garbage time, right? It's like one team's up 35 to nothing. It's 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter, football. And, they're putting in the second string guys, they're trying all the whack trick plays. They're going for it on 4th and 7. It's garbage time, right? And the touchdowns and stuff that happened at that point really don't matter because, the game's already over, right? Well, folks, it's getting to be garbage time in this debate about ending the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs. And it has to do with this poll that Project Sam is crowing about. I caught up on Kevin Sabet's feed, and he's been crowing about this new poll because the whole deal with Project Sam is they get to play the Goldilocks game. They're going to say, ooh, prohibition, that's too tough. But, ooh, legalization, that's too soft. And, decriminalization with forced rehab, that's just right, as long as we can continue to imprison growers and sellers. Yay, right? So their whole game is to try to get the American people, it's fear, uncertainty, and doubt, muddy the waters, make it seem as if there's some safe middle ground where we can keep punishing the potheads, but not so much. So as a part of this, of course, they've been facing, the last 34 polls, last 30-some-odd polls that have asked people whether or not marijuana should be legalized have found, now above 60% in the last five have shown that the people say, yeah, marijuana should be legalized. So they want to drive a wedge in that. They want to find a way to pick away at that. And the way they've done it is to try to frame this as, see, you're only giving people the choice of too hard and too soft. You're not giving them the middle choice, our little middle ground choice of forcing rehab on pot smokers and then still imprisoning growers and sellers. So they commissioned this poll from Mason-Dix, and they asked it with four different breakdowns. I think it's 4 or 5, right? And they found that given the first choice was keep federal laws the way they are. Keep prohibition the way it is. The second choice was keep prohibition the way it is, except allow for medical marijuana. And the third choice was keep prohibition the way it is, except allow for medical marijuana and decriminalize personal possession and use. And the fourth choice was legalize marijuana commercial style, just like they got in 8 states now. So the results on that poll were 16% keep prohibition, 29% allow medical, 5% allow medical and decrim, and 49% that supported the commercial sale, growing and sale of marijuana, right? Commercial style marijuana legalization. And there was another 1% that were undecided. Okay. So they're crowing about this saying, aha, see, support for legalization drops from 64% to 49% when you give people other choices. That's the way they want to frame it, right? That the support for legalization isn't strong, that there's a weak point there in allowing for commercialization. But here's the problem. It's kind of an own goal on their point, because number one, the middle ground was only supported by 34%. If you add up that allow medical and allow medical and decrim people together, it's only 34%. And 49% are for the commercial side. So even given the middle ground choice, it loses to commercial legalization. But the other thing, of course, beyond the obvious one of only 16% of the people support prohibition, which means 84% of the people want to change federal marijuana laws. Now, Project Sam keeps saying that they're for decriminalization and research into medical and all this kind of stuff, but they never come out with an actual bill or proposal in any state legislatures or anything to do such a thing. And of course, nothing at the federal congressional level. They never actually put up any sort of language, right? But what this is showing us is that if they did, the language that would have to be supported would at least have to include medical marijuana protections and allow personal use and possession. So Project Sam, in trumpeting this report, is actually making the case that there should be federal medical marijuana decriminalization, a position that is opposite of what they espouse. Now, the other thing that's interesting is they had another poll question on this, which was they made it back into a binary choice. Instead of the binary choice of legalization versus prohibition, though, they made the question of, would they support federal prohibition if personal use and possession were decriminalized? So now the selection is, do we support prohibition or do we support decrim? 50% supported decrim. So yay! Good, right? Half the people support not jailing, arresting people for marijuana. That's a start. But yet, I have yet to see Project Sam come out in support of any decrim bills or any of these cities that are moving forward with decrim measures. Funny. Also, you got to look at the skew of this poll. The political views of the people in the survey, they pulled out 35% of the group was conservatives, 32% were moderates, and 28% were liberal. Okay, so this poll is skewing conservative as it is. And then when you get to the fringe edge, very conservative came in at 18%. Very liberal came in at 8%. So there's over twice as many very conservatives as very liberals. And the very conservatives made up over half of those who were conservative, whereas very liberals made up less than half of those who were liberals. So a conservative skewing poll has found that 84% of the people think federal marijuana laws should be changed, at least to allow medical marijuana, probably to allow decriminalization of personal possession and use, and more than likely to allow the commercial production and sale of marijuana to adults who wish to have it. Bravo, Project Sam. Thank you very much for commissioning that poll and once again helping us. I mean, really, I should be happy about Project Sam. I mean, when they first started, there were two legal marijuana states. There were something like, 18 medical states? There were, don't quote me on that one, I'm not exactly sure how many there were, but there were two legal states when they started. Gallup polls showed marijuana legalization supported about 48%. And now, after 5 years of hard work and lobbying and doing public service and doing educational campaigns and putting up websites and making videos and appearing on radio and TV hundreds or thousands of times, after all that work, support for marijuana legalization is at 64%. Good work, fellas. Keep up the good work.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
For everyone here at Delta 9 House and Studios, I'm Radical Russ Belleville. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.